Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, June 30th. And today, quite a day in the marketplace because we not only ended the week trade, we ended the monthly trade, we ended the quarterly trade, and we ended the first half of the year trade. All of that on Wall Street today, and just ahead of the 4th of July weekend. I'll mention this probably a couple of times during our get-together this week, the fact that there will be a market on Monday, but it will be a shortened market because they'll be shutting down commodity trade and Wall Street trade during the noon hour, some of them ending at 12 noon, others at 12:15. And then they'll be closed on Tuesday, the 4th of July, and reopen for normal trading hours on Wednesday. Tuesday is probably the most awkward day you can have for a holiday because you can't have the market closed for four consecutive days. So it has to open on Monday, even though there probably won't, well, there'll be a few people, but not many doing trading because the long holiday weekend is already started for just about everybody in the marketplace. But they will trade till noontime and then, of course, closed on Tuesday. So make your marketing plans accordingly. Now, with all of the closings today, let's go through them. For the week, the S&P down 0.61%. The Dow down 0.21%, and the NASDAQ down 2%. For the month, the S&P up 0.5%, the Dow up 1.2%, the NASDAQ down nearly 1%. For the quarter, the S&P rose 2.5%, the Dow up 0.3%, and the NASDAQ gained a little over 3.75%. And for the first half, the Dow rose 8%. The S&P 500 gained 8.25%. And the NASDAQ up over 14% for the first half of the year. Turned out to be the best first half for the Dow and the S&P since 2013, and the best first half for the NASDAQ since 2009. So those are some of the numbers that traders were looking at the end of today's trade. Let's look at today's trade briefly as stock indices ended a volatile week on a modestly high note, thanks to the well-received quarterly report of Nike. Nike shares rose 11% after the world's largest footwear maker reported a quarterly profit that topped estimates and said it would launch a pilot online sales program with Amazon.com. Nike shares gave the biggest boost to the Dow today and also the S&P 500. And one comment by a trader that asked the question, are we going to see a broadening of the rally where you see more of the financials and other sectors fill in some of the gaps? He went on to answer his question by saying, it hasn't been a broad, encompassing rally that I think investors will have to see a little bit more conviction rather than just in a handful of stocks. Oil continues to be in the business news as oil today climbed for a seventh straight session thanks to a decrease in the U.S. rig count and stronger demand from China that lifted the depressed oil prices that still finished the first half with the biggest decline for that period since 1998. U.S. crude futures settled today down $1.11, and that's about 2.5% to $46.04 a barrel. Benchmark Brent crude futures settled a half dollar higher at $47.92. Both of the benchmark oil prices ended the first half of 2017 with declines of more than 14%. since December 30th of 2016. That's the largest drop since Brent and U.S. crude fell about 19% in the first half of 1998. Trading volume was low ahead of the U.S. Independence Day holiday weekend, but it'll probably be even lower on the half-day trading session on Monday because there will not be that many traders on the floor. A Tesla. Elon Musk continues to make news. He's the chief executive. He said, quote, "There would be news on Sunday." That was in reply to a tweet by Douglas Bailey, who asked Musk to end the speculation on the release of the Model 3 mass-market Tesla auto. And Musk had said in May that Tesla was on track to begin production of the Model 3 sedan in July. The car will be priced at about $35,000. Tesla expects to produce over 5,000 Model 3s per week by the end of this year. So we'll wait for that response to show up sometime early in the month. For those of you who like to invest in stock that Warren Buffett picks as his favorite, you may want to take a look at Bank of America. Warren Buffett's company will become the biggest shareholder in the Bank of America after Berkshire Hathaway today invoked its right to acquire 700 million shares of the second largest U.S. bank. So those of you who follow Buffett, Bank of America is your next stop for investment. Then how about the computer virus that disrupted world business this week? You know, I've been saying for 4 or 5 years, if you ever want to defeat a country or bring it to its knees, you don't have to bomb it. All you have to do is shut down the internet for several days or a week, and you'll put that country out of business. There were firms that all over the world, really, that were disrupted, ports from Mumbai to Los Angeles, and the hacking even stopped production at a chocolate factory in August. So we are vulnerable, and probably every time a new computer program comes out, some high school kid in Russia or the United States can hack it very quickly. Well, Takata had to finally face up to the truth. Japan's Takata Corporation, the firm at the center of the auto industry's biggest ever product recall, filed for bankruptcy protection in the United States and Japan, and also said it had agreed to be acquired for $1.6 billion by the Chinese-owned but U.S.-based company Key Safety Systems. The biggest bankruptcy of a Japanese manufacturer. Estimates are that they face up to $50 billion in costs and liabilities resulting from almost a decade of recalls and lawsuits. Its airbag inflators have been linked to at least 16 deaths and 180 injuries around the world because of their malfunction. And then the American company Alphabet Google is going to find out what it's like to write a check for $2.7 billion because antitrust regulators in the European Union hit Alphabet Google with a record $2.7 billion fine this week, taking a tough line in the first of three investigations into the company's dominance in searches and in smartphones. So I don't know if there's an appeal process for that. If there is, I'm sure that it will be pursued. But this is a decision by the antitrust regulators. And then a final note here as we look to our neighbors to the north. I sometimes get embarrassed by the fact that we don't really pay much attention or know much about business in other countries of the world. And yet, as I travel to many countries, they know everything about us. Well, Canada's economy grew for the sixth consecutive month in April, that from Statistics Canada today, pushing the Canadian dollar to a nine-month high and boosting speculation. The central bank in Canada could soon do what we've done here, raise interest rates. A lot more we could talk about, but we're going to focus now on our market visit of the week. And the commodity we're going to be talking about, farmland. We'll visit with Ray Brownfield and learn more about where we stand with the value of farmland and where it could be going. So stay with us, because we'll get to that when we continue here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The company is LandPro. The managing broker owner is Ray Brownfield, a gentleman who has joined us before here, and we look forward to this visit, Ray, because we have seen the low commodity prices continue. What's it doing to farmland value?
You know, you would think, proportionally speaking, that they would go down about the same rapid rate as commodities, but they have not. Particularly high-quality land, still strong interest, and an 80, a 40, maybe 160 next to maybe two or three people who really still want to own it for the rest of their lifetimes, it still has pretty high value. Now, is there some pressure? Yes, no question about that. But the lesser quality that has less tillable ground, drainage issues, has seen a much greater drop.
The price of farmland, as you say, the good farmland, is there much of that coming on the market?
There's not. There really is not much out there. I think people are either retaining it because they do know it's a good investment, and that's probably the reason, one of the main reasons, that we don't see much online. When it does come on the market, it does still have quite a bit of demand.
And who is doing the buying besides the neighbor?
Well, that's the primary, is the neighbor, the local owner-operator, who feels that, you know, the absolute return is not as important as a long-term ownership as compared to maybe a true investor who says, I can't do that.
We've seen one increase in interest rates, could see another one. Will that have an impact?
So far it has not. I think it has to get up to a little higher level, maybe in the 8 to 9% before it's really going to have a big impact on people's ability to borrow money. There's a lot of money available yet out there. People are soliciting loans, so I don't see that as a big issue yet.
What kind of an interest rate are you looking at on farmland?
It depends on the balance sheet, but probably close to 4%, maybe a little bit over that. Depends on the term as well, but it's still not that high, comparatively speaking, to many years ago.
It got very high many years ago.
As I remember.
Let's look at cash rents. Are they at a reasonable level?
Well, what's reasonable?
that's
depends
true.
Depends with the owner and the operator, but you know, I'd say yes, pretty much so. What will they do this fall for 2018 remains the big question. We really don't know. We'd hope they remain the same for the most part. But if these commodity prices don't do much than they are today, there could be more pressure on the cash rents, no question.
And are we concerned about this younger generation trying to get involved in ownership? Do you work with young people?
We do, and I'm very concerned about the younger people because it costs so much money to get in the farming operation, really, and it's probably been this way for a long time. Uncle, grandpa, dad, somebody's got to help these people. we try to the degree that we can, but certainly we're not in the lending business either. So if there's a, what I'm glad to see now in my business, I'm seeing a lot of father-son operations, and this is wonderful. You can see dad or grandpa is bringing that young man on and getting them ownership interest at some point, and that's what we're really looking for. So we're really fortunate to have a number of those in our portfolio, actually.
Several years ago, I tried to get something going where couples nearing retirement without any heirs find a young farmer in the area and start working with him. Is that happening at all?
To a some degree. I don't see a lot of it, frankly. I wish we did, but I don't see a lot of it.
Now, farmland in the United States, at one time there was great concern about foreign ownership. Is it still happening?
You know, very quietly it's happening. I really saw an article the other day about the Chinese had actually bought more land than people thought. Of course, it's under a different corporation name, so you wouldn't know. Is it great? No. The Argentines are still showing more interest in coming here because they think it's a good time, maybe politically, to move their money into the United States. Well, the question is, how can they do that? We'll see. But there is some of that going on, but not anywhere near what people might suggest or think.
At one time, as I recall, the Japanese were buying all the farmland in the country, but apparently that went away.
That went away and never was what people thought it was going to be.
Yeah, very true. So overall, the farm economy is having not much of an impact?
Well, it depends on the individual operators. And everybody manages their business differently, and we all do that in every business. But I think there's some folks out there probably are going to have some more challenges coming in the fall. It depends on how they marketed their crops. Depends a lot on crop production, lots of things, input costs, and their debt. There's others out there who are going to get through it okay and survive the long pull is what we're in it for, of course. So it's really a varied type of picture that we see out there.
Can't really compare it to the 1980s, can you?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Recreational land at one time was a much sought piece of property. Is that still the case?
It's getting better. Expendable income is always the barometer for recreational land. So we're seeing some more interest, but not nearly what it once was. I wish we did, because we'd like to sell more of that if we could.
Right. And I'll bet some farmers would like to sell it too.
They would.
Is it an emotional thing with farmers when they have to finally put the farm on the market?
Absolutely. It truly is. We've seen cases where there are no heirs, no people really in the family want that land, and it's been theirs for how many generations in the family? So it is it's almost a trauma in some cases to see, okay, here it goes.
Because when you go to state fairs around the country, just about every state fair has a Centennial Farm Program, a Sesquicentennial Farm Program. And, yeah, you hate to break that tradition.
You really do, and it's been there for a long time. But it happens, and it will continue to happen over time. And but this is where I think it's nice where some of the younger people can come back in, or that retiring farmer does find somebody in the neighborhood that may have an interest and be able to take over.
One of the things I tell young people is leave the farm for 4 or 5 years and do something else. By all means, you know, go to college and get the education, but then do something else and you'll probably appreciate coming back to the farm a little bit more.
And we've seen that. In fact, I know several cases like that where exactly that happened. It enriches their lifestyle, but also it broadens it as to what's really out there and how to do business in many respects. This is a business. It truly is. So you need to understand how you do that and the economics, the people skills, all the things that we have to do in any job we have.
I guess one of the things that might help with younger people is the fact that unless you're with livestock or dairy cows, as I grew up with, it isn't necessarily 24/7, 7 days a week anymore.
Not necessarily. I'm laughing because I see all kinds of situations out there that I won't relate to on the radio here. But for the most part, they keep very busy year-round with the spraying, all the things we have to do. Machinery, and the fellows do a lot of their own machinery repairs and things like that. So they do seem to be very, very busy, and seasonally, depends on, you know, what's going on this year. They've been pretty busy trying to catch up.
Yeah, and harvest will be longer than normal, too, I would guess.
I suspect it will be, yes. It looks that way.
Finally, Ray, in the area of land selling, auctions versus treaty or
agreements? The auctions are still always a good avenue to sell if you have quality land and a high demand, usually in that area. You have to understand, as an owner of land, what is the market in your area.
Yeah.
It isn't always, an auction is not always the best way to go. If there's a quieter market, a more conservative market, maybe not as good a land, it may not sell where you want it to. But like I say, the quality land, the smaller tracts, still a pretty gosh darn good way to let her go.
And do quite a few of your older farmers take the auction route? Because they probably grew up with auctions.
Some don't, because they don't like the show that's put on. It's very public. And sometimes they would prefer not to be in the show, so to speak. So it varies, but a lot of them rather go private treaty, actually.
When we look at some large tracts of land, and we see them occasionally anywhere around the country, you get maybe 20, 30 buyers coming in to bid on it, and many of them successfully bidding on it. Do you find that?
Well, it depends on, again, the size and the location of the 20 to 30. It may, at the tail end of the auction, may be 3 to 4. And maybe, of course, it gets down to probably 2 at the very end. It could be a multi-parcel type auction where there's various combinations that you do have various bidders. But at the end of the day, though, it's going to get down to just several.
Does the first winning bidder then have the option of adding more tracts to what he's already paid the price for?
It depends on the auction and how they want to handle it. It can be buyer's choice. In some cases, that's how some auction companies do it. Other times, it is what you paid for, and that's what you're going to get. Then you start and you do it again on another parcel. So it really varies on what the rules of the game are going to be, what should be announced prior to the sale.
Now, in your business, you manage, but you also sell.
We do.
And which do you like best?
That's a loaded question, Orin. I've done this work for 52 years, believe it or not,
really?
And I like them both. Yeah. I like property management a lot because I get to work very directly with the farm operator and the owner, and that's a very rewarding opportunity, and it's usually long-term. So I do enjoy that. However, the real estate brokerage is very rewarding. It's really, when you do accomplish a sale where you've made everybody happy, it's a great day, and that's what we want to do, is do a premium job of getting the job done.
Finally, are there adequate appraisers available to come and take a look at your land if you're going to put it on the market?
That has become a big problem because the licensing issues require so much education and experience. It's really narrowed the number of people out there, and the people have been so good, they're retiring.
Yeah.
And so it's really difficult to find, but they're out there, and certainly we can help people find those good appraisers because they are available.
And then how do people get in touch with you if they want to take advantage of your services?
Well, I appreciate it. It's Ray Brownfield, of course, and the best way to catch me is my cell phone is 630-258-4800, and I'm in Oswego, Illinois, up here in kind of the northern section, but I cover the state.
Thank you for joining us. A visit with Ray Brownfield. He's the managing broker and owner of LandPro.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
A lot of activity in the report picture for agricultural traders this week with the quarterly pig crop report on Thursday and the stocks in all positions report today, and the planted acreage report today. Quickly looking at the highlights of those reports. Corn stocks in all positions as of June 1st totaled 5,230,000,000 bushels. That's up 11% from June 1st a year ago. And of the total stocks, 2,840,000,000 bushels stored on farms. That's up 15% from a year earlier, and that means farmers have some grain bins to empty before the harvest begins. Soybeans stored in all positions on the 1st of June totaled 963 million bushels. That's up 11% from June a year ago. On-farm stocks totaled 330 million bushels.
That's up 18% from a year ago, but the percentage on farm, quite a bit smaller than the corn number. Old crop, all wheat, stored in all positions on June 1st of 2017, totaled 1,180 million bushels. That's up 21% from a year ago. And then we turn to the acreage report that was also issued today by the Department of Agriculture. And those numbers, there wasn't a lot of agreement on where those numbers would come in. But corn planted area for all purposes this year is estimated at 90,900,000 acres, down 3% from last year. And compared with last year, planted acres are down or unchanged in 38 of the 48 estimating states. Soybean planting area for 2017 estimated at a record high of 89.5 million acres. That's up 7% from last year. And all wheat planted for 2017 is estimated at 45.7 million acres, down 9% from a year ago. And all cotton for 2017 estimated at 12,100,000 acres. That's 20% above last year. So it'll be interesting to see how many traders are on the floor for the short session on Monday to trade the numbers in that report. So where will we start on Monday price-wise for that short session? Well, the wheat story has been unbelievable. July wheat ended the week at $5.11 a bushel, up 30 and 3 quarter cents today. The Minneapolis Grain Exchange week has had an unbelievable ride higher. As a matter of fact, on Thursday, the spring wheat futures traded up 50 cents a bushel in the nearby contract. Even corn did better than traders expected. The July corn contract will start Monday at 370.5 a bushel. That's up 10.25 for the day. New crop December corn will trade at 392 at the market opening on Monday, and that's up 10.75. July soybeans will start at 942.25 after gaining 24.75 today. November soybeans will start at 954.75, and that comes after trading 27.75 higher today. Turning to livestock, the pig crop report. It wasn't, I guess, as bad as some people thought, because today we saw the August lean hog contract up the $3 daily limit on the close, so it'll be trading expanded limits on Monday when the market opens with the price at $83.75. August live cattle traded higher most of the day, but then ended down 22 cents a hundredweight, and it will start trading at $116.30. And the August feeder cattle contract gained $1.02 today, so it'll start trading Monday at $147.92 a hundredweight. The lot of activity this week in the agricultural community beyond markets. Monsanto reported in its quarterly earnings report, a better report than thought. Seed and agrochemicals company Monsanto, which is in the process of being bought by Germany's Bayer, reported a stronger than expected quarterly profit. Record soybean plantings lifting seed sales. And then the pink slime trial in Elk Point, South Dakota, that was going to run about 8 weeks, they said at the outset, barely made it to 4 weeks, because this week BPI, that's Beef Processors Products Incorporated, settled that defamation lawsuit against American Broadcasting Company and its reporter Jim Avila. Details of the settlement were not revealed. Well, you have a safe and healthy and happy 4th of July weekend. I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.